Everybody, welcome to a Tuesday Sports Line, the Bulldog Hour. Kevin Morey alongside, as always, take you to three, hand it off to our great friend Phil Venati, his outstanding show. Behind the bench, normally 3 hours, 2 hours tonight, because he is headed out to Buchanan tonight for Clovis North and Buchanan at 6:45. The Lakers at that same time will be over on 790 to play the Nuggets. So a big basketball night. I'll tell you all about the schedule, not only for tonight, but moving forward for the first time without college football, but still big time NFL coming up over the weekend with the conference championship games and then the Super Bowl in a couple of weeks. So we'll get to the schedule a little bit later on, courtesy of Ed Dunkel and his fine business, Precision Civil Engineering, planning, land surveying, civil engineering, landscape architecture, construction management, all there under one roof. 449-4500 or Precision ENG, or if you prefer precisioneng.net for more information. When we go over the schedules, I'll tell you everything Ed does is a great benefactor to the alma mater of Fresno State and the Lyles College of Engineering. So we'll get to that a little bit later on. On a Tuesday, it means our outstanding de facto co-host, Jackson Moore, first of two visits. It'll be time to put pretty close to the final stamp on the transfer portal for this particular January. As Jackson mentioned the other day, we know that the formal deadline, well, the public deadline anyway, was the 16th, going from the 2nd to the 16th. But then, as Jackson mentioned the other day, a little bit of fudge time afterward. It should all be wrapped up now. So I'll talk to Jackson about that, and we'll go over basketball for Fresno State and a few other things. We'll get to that in just a moment. But first, our other lead dogs want to spend some time with you. Great friends at KFC, Fresno, Clovis, Selma, and Kerman. Every day they help us out at the station, and they certainly are great, great supporters of athletics throughout the valley. And right now they want to tell you about the brand new Zinger chicken sandwich they have at the local KFCs. It's a crispy hand-breaded chicken filet seasoned just right and served hot on a toasted bun with cool crisp lettuce and creamy sauce that hits every craving. And say this every day at 2:08 in the afternoon, in particular today's direct dive. It sounds great to me at 2 in the morning. Sounds particularly great at 2:08 in the afternoon. It's bold, it's spicy, and it's finger-looking good. Whether you crave the spice or just crave the great taste, the Zingers deliver all that for you with the terrific KFC crunch you know and love. So don't wait. Grab the new Zinger today when you stop by your local KFCs. Tell them thanks for supporting athletics throughout this great valley of ours. And also keep in mind, on Tuesdays like today, they have the $10 eight-piece or eight tenders deal. They still have country fried steak deals on Wednesday. They have their $5 bowls. They have their pot pies. A lot of great food at the local KFCs in Fresno, Clovis, Selma, and Kerman. Finally, a reminder about the weather comes from our longtime pals and sponsors at Lee's Air Plumbing, Heating, and Roofing. More information, leesair.com or 825-5337, 825-LEES. Been in the Central Valley since 1981. See the avocado green and blue trucks all over the place. I've had them in to do work even during COVID. Really professional people, very timely, terrific competitive pricing. Anything you need, give them a call or head to the web at leesair.com. Also, they sponsor the Lee's Air Hotline. That's how we bring up guests like Jackson Moore and how Phil can bring up not only guests, but also callers from the general public. So mark it down, 559-320-1430. All right, well, Lee's allows me the time to tell you about the weather, so let's go ahead and do that. It is a little bit of same old right now. Foggy as hell in the morning. People know that. It burns off most days by 11 or so. Yesterday it was 3 or 4 in the afternoon before it burned off. Some days it just doesn't burn off. And as we mentioned, when it doesn't burn off, we end up in the 50s. If it does, we get into the 60s. So that being the backdrop, today a 55 with a low of 44, 57 tomorrow, 59 on Thursday. And then the hope is that we're going to get a little bit of activity maybe in the upper reaches, and that'll bring some wind and a little more cloud cover, and maybe we'll get rid of the fog, at least to the extent that we're seeing it right now, for Friday, Saturday, and over the weekend. So after the 59 on Thursday, 62 Friday, 60 Saturday, and then 62 and 65 for next Monday, and the lows in the mid-40s, but that means that we're still going to see fog overnight, particularly in the outlying areas. Hopefully, by Thursday or Friday, it won't be as overwhelming as it's been, because at night, I mean, if you happen to be up like I am all night long, when you look at the security cameras around the old estate, all I see is what looks like rain. In reality, that's the moisture from the clouds that are the fog that are right on ground level. So it's been a tough go, and I know we've had a number of accidents and some real tragic circumstances, so I hope people are very careful out in the road. Anyway, thanks everybody at Lee's again for allowing us the time. Lee'sAir.com, 825-5337, 825-Lee's. Anything you need, central air, plumbing, heating, or roofing, these are the people to see. And speaking of Lee's and the Lee's Air hotline, right now on that hotline at 559-320-1430, it is our de facto co-host, the master of disaster, the king of all he surveys, it is Sir Jackson Moore, MrBarkBoard.com, or as we like to call him, Hey Bark Boy. Jackson, how you doing?
I'm doing well, Tony. How are you?
Just fine, Jackson. So... you've been barking at your bosses at Paramount? I've asked you this before. Do you just call them up and bark at them arbitrarily, Jackson?
Not lately.
Not lately. Oh, they asked you to stop finally, huh? They said, you know, Moore, it was really endearing the first year or two, but stop barking at us, right? All right. Well, look, you're so invaluable, you can get away with whatever you want. Although, did they blame you for Oregon's failures? I'm just wondering. Somehow, did it tangentially get to you, the great failure, or was it the fact that they were playing an Indiana team that evidently doesn't know how to lose? At least they didn't during this year. And by the way, if you are Kurt Cignetti, he said it yesterday, wouldn't you be tempted, Jackson, to just ride off into the sunset now? You remember George Costanza, the Seinfeld episode where he needs to know when to leave the stage? Isn't this the time to drop the mic and leave the stage and say to the NFL, done there, been there, done that, I'm done with college, pay me a lot of money, let me see if I can fail like Nick Saban in the NFL? Is that what you'd be doing if you're Cignetti?
That would be classic, and there's pretty much no way he can top the job he did this year. He can only try to stack championships going forward. So I would be tempted if I was him.
Well, that's the thing. I mean, you know, people, he looks young, right? I mean, it's frightening to think that he is only 5 years younger than I am. When in reality, if we were next to one another, you would say, once you say, hey, the one guy with the gray hair is a merchant of death. Who is the young-looking guy? Who is the Bill Hader-looking guy from Saturday Night Live that's coaching Indiana? But he is actually 64 years old. I mean, he can only go down from here, right? I mean, let's be honest about it. And they showed the shot of Mark Cuban in the stands last night. And, you know, Panish has said, when I said John Mellencamp, he said, you want to know who's really in charge of making that motor run financially? It's Mark Cuban. Do you really believe, as much as it was an unbelievable 16-0 run, that this can ever be repeated at Indiana, or at least in the foreseeable future?
I don't see it being as perfect as this was, but what I think it does do is give hope to a lot of programs and maybe spark an attempt to do something like that, which may create some logos we haven't seen in some high places. But 16-0 and the dominance they were, I don't think it's happening, and I'm still stunned it happened this year with the amount of money and resources that some of the teams that they beat or didn't have to play put in over the course of the last 12 months.
Well, and that's a very fair and accurate statement, because it has been repeated, and it's fair that it has been repeated, that if you're looking at those four-star athletes, a lot more of them on the teams that they defeated than are on that IU club. But this isn't the old IU little sister to the poor routine. You know, I had mentioned to you, Jackson, that, you know, being older, I certainly was aware of the 1967 Indiana team they lost to the eventual national champion USC Trojans in the Rose Bowl 14-3, and their job there in January 1 of 1968 was to stop Simpson, OJ Simpson. Now we fast forward, what, 56 years later, whatever it is, and all of a sudden, or 57, whatever it was, and it's OJ, no, but Ty Simpson, yes. So I'm just saying, you had the symmetry. Two Indiana teams, one that couldn't get it done and then disappeared from the national landscape forever, who, by the way, had a quarterback named Harry Gonzo. That was the quarterback of Indiana back in 1967. I would purport to you that he was not going to be the number one draft choice at any point in the National Football League. Okay. But you have a team that is very talented, but maybe not as talented as the teams that they played against. So are we back to the Bun Phillips line about Don Shula? Is Kirk Cignetti so good he can take Hizen and beat Yorin, or take Yorin and beat Hizen? What's the story there?
I think so. And what's going to be curious is he's already gotten a raise, and I assume they're going to get more money into that NIL pool. And even I've been watching a lot of these national All-American games for the high schoolers. Since they're covering Oregon now, a lot of these guys are more relevant now to my job. And they, I believe it was the Navy All-American Bowl. They have announcements of commits during the game, and two recruits picked Indiana back-to-back over just about every other offer in the country. And the comment was made that, like, in the whole history of the game, they've never seen one recruit commit to Indiana at that stage, let alone two back-to-back. So you can only imagine they're going to get better talent-wise on paper, but I think there was something special about this group. The receivers they had were they made some plays that just were unbelievable compared to what they were evaluated at one point. And then I think there's something a little special about Fernando Mendoza as well, for him to lead that team. You know, they might get a more talented arm down the road with Cignetti, but I don't think they're going to have as much of a leader and a team manager as they did with Mendoza.
And as we talked yesterday, barring the unforeseen with Moore deciding to stay, speaking of Oregon staying in college, I don't see that there's any way that Mendoza will not be the number one pick of the Raiders in the draft. Is that your guess as well?
Yeah, that's my assumption. And it's not necessarily where I'd want to see him go if I could take a choice for him, but we'll see what happens.
You're not looking forward to Joe Grugel coaching the Raiders again? remember when Al Davis got John Gruden and Joe Bugle confused and introduced his new coaches? Ladies and gentlemen, the new coach of the Oakland Raiders at the time, LA Raiders, whatever it was, Coach Joe Grugel, ladies and gentlemen. That was prior to chasing Lane Kiffin all around the facility. But I would hope that the dysfunction of the Raiders would find its way back to what used to be the greatness of the Raiders, when, as we've talked so often, it was commitment to excellence, not commitment to excrement, which is what a lot of Raider fans have said it is. And as a guy, like I told you, I grew up loving both the 49ers and Raiders, because when I was a kid, they were not in the same leagues. They didn't even play one another, except they wanted to play an exhibition game at some point. So you didn't have to have the torn loyalties that you have now. And the Raiders were a model franchise, and they won more than anybody. And Al Davis was a former coach who was now an owner and knew what he was doing. But, boy, when Al started to lose his faculties, the Raiders definitely have seen it come off rails. I mean, if you want to be specific, since 1983, more times than not, it's been off rails with the club. So we'll see what they do. I hope they do draft Mendoza, and I hope they have a great success with him. One last thing, Jackson, about this. By the way, for bookkeeping, it's been 58 years since the last time that Indiana was prominent, a mere 58 years, 1967 season to January 1, 68 in the Rose Bowl to January 1, 2026 in the Rose Bowl. I mentioned to you off air that Stephen A. Smith was talking, because we brought this up, about the possibility of Congress, or maybe the necessity of Congress getting involved to get some sort of handle on transfer portal and NIL, saying that both sides of the aisle, at least when you look at Ted Cruz on one side and you look at Hakeem Jeffries, Cory Booker on the other side, and we're talking about Senate and House and all, there appears to be certain individuals, Jackson, that are willing to step into this. And I do mean step into it, because it is a political problem, because it can be perceived as you are worrying about something that is not in the forefront of the concern of a lot of people across the country. Do you think we're going to see enough Congress people? I mentioned the other day that, everybody needs to grow a spine about this kind of stuff. Are we going to see Congress people willing to step into this breach right now and try to solve this thing before it gets completely out of hand, if it hasn't already?
Yeah, it sounds like people are motivated to do it. I'm not sure what exactly the solution is. They would have to put up some guardrails that kind of defy, I think, some of the legal decisions up to this point, which would be a pretty big step, probably more so, more work than most people who say they want to get involved probably would ultimately want to have to do, but I think that's about the only way. And I'm just curious where this goes. We've talked about it from the start. You know, you've got people putting in all this money, and for most people, outside of seeing wins for 1 year, there's not much return on investment. That money disappears, and there's only so many boosters in schools that have an unlimited flow for so long. I just don't see how it's sustainable for all the schools that are doing it. There's maybe a handful that can do it infinitively down the future, but it's going to be tough to keep this amount of money that's going around, which is only growing each offseason. And then a lot as well with the portal, I think the reason that probably legislature and Congress people should step up is because of the potential for the sport and something that's vital for entertainment in this country to kind of lose its luster if you know, what people are used to just totally vanishes and you can't recognize it anymore. So far, I think it's sustained that. I don't think college football is any less popular than it was 5 years ago, but it definitely feels different.
Well, you know this, if you're Indiana and you do what they just did, you go 16-0 and win a national title for the first time ever, you're going to have a lot of multimillionaires, alums, people or geographically in your area willing to give you a ton of money because you're winning. But, you know, if you start losing, then you watch how quickly that starts to dry up. And, you know, I always think about that Lou Holtz line when he was at Notre Dame and we had him on the air talking about it after he retired. Told you when he said when he showed up there at Touchdown Jesus, and the father said if they had the, you know, the disaster by taking a high school coach and it just didn't work out for Notre Dame, and Holtz comes in and the father say, you know, Lou, we want you to be competitive, and he said the first year they lose 4 games by a total of 8 points, and they call him back in and say, Lou, when we said competitive, we meant we want you to win. He goes, the next year he wins all but one. They call him back in and say, Lou, when we said we wanted you to win, we meant we wanted you to win them all. So the next year they win them all. They win the national title. The fathers call him back in and say, Lou, when we said we wanted you to win them all, we meant we wanted you to win them all big. Okay. That is the expectation, Jackson. You can see certain places. So if that's the expectation, number one, even if you're a very well-paid coach, I think that ulcer grows in a big, big hurry. Are we going to see a domino effect now, not only more money going to Indiana, for instance, but more of the big boys panicked by what happened with Indiana, and all of a sudden the benefactors at the Alabamas, at the Georgias, at the Oklahomas, at the USCs, at Penn State, the traditional powers, that they are going to step up, but with that they're going to be even more demanding that the team wins and wins big?
I would say so. I think you look at the run Alabama had, and you wonder how that would have changed if a bunch of pocketbooks were motivated to try to knock that off on top of everything else that was going into building those teams at the time. I think it would be especially difficult if you have the brand and the history behind you and a program that's done nothing all this time, that suddenly that same type of power, if Indiana can keep this up for a couple of years. So it's also just a weird spot, I think, for a lot of programs, like covering Oregon. You know, they kept their entire defensive front, all four of those guys probably could have gone to the NFL draft. Dante Moore was the quarterback, supposed to be the number two pick, and he decided to come back.
Right.
But at the same time, you know, you don't have much depth because all those second teamers, they don't want to be backups for another year. They want to go get paid or play somewhere where they can earn money. So now all of a sudden you've got a bunch of juggernaut teams paying top dollars for backup defensive linemen. You know, it really, the market changes in a hurry depending on what the needs are for just a handful of schools. And then if you're in the Pac-12, you're just waiting for all those waves to pass so you can pick up what's left.
Well, that leads us to Fresno State, because we talk about just that, attrition, acquisition versus the inevitable attrition. And I've asked you before, Jackson, which one is more important, which one is more difficult to attain, meaning the acquisition or retention of athletes. Is it at Fresno State equal import on both sides? Is it more difficult on the one side than the other, as far as, is it tougher to get guys in here and a little bit easier to get them to stay, or is it the other way around, or where are we at, or is it truly each individual is a different case study in and of itself?
Yeah, it is a mixture. You look at probably the best players on the Bulldog roster that are coming back, some of the most valuable players you would think in the portal, probably names like Rayshon Speedy Luke and Simeon Harris and Josiah Freeman, and in those individual bases, they all had motivation to come back instead of chasing that money. I think also Fresno State as a whole, successful enough, but not a lot of top-end statistical players that were jumping off the board and heavily desired by power conference programs. So you also kind of flew under the radar a little bit. And then you had one player with Richie Anderson who was just offered so much money, it was a non-starter of the Bulldogs being able to keep him around. So, you know, retention is huge, but there's kind of two tiers of it. There's certain guys, it doesn't matter. There's almost no scenario available to keep certain players from certain dollar amounts that are being tossed their way. But those tweeners, those guys that can maybe go either way, it's huge if you can keep them. And having some sort of connection, some sort of incentive within the program to keep them around is big. And fortunately, the Bulldogs had a few of those guys this year. And that local model, that Central Valley, maybe even Greater California roster connection, hopefully is something that they can take advantage of for the long term as they try to retain players. Bringing players in is huge, but it's changed a lot in just a few years. You think back to maybe 2021, 22, players could see Fresno State had a pretty well-built team and they might have a hole and they could fill that spot and be great and get in and out in a year or two if they were grad transfers. Now the money is just so different to where it's really hard to convince someone to come in and take that starting spot when they could be maybe the eighth guy on an SEC roster and make three or four times as much money. So that's changed the math quite a bit as well. So at least for this offseason, Fresno State has done well by retaining as much as possible and then doing as best they can in the portal.
Well, look, you're right. And it is that difficult balancing act. And I want to make sure that this is out there. I know if you're someone who is in extreme financial duress, meaning you come from a background where your family just doesn't have the money, that it behooves you to take the best offer, particularly because the National Football League is no guarantee. Even if you have a world of talent, all it takes is one play. You know, I was talking to Jorge before it came up, you know, doing the Warrior game last night and seeing Jimmy Butler go down. You know, Jimmy Butler makes $54 million a year, so Jimmy Butler is not going to have to worry about, you know, where his next meal is coming from. But also now, with one play at his age, it may be over. And we've seen it happen to kids who are 18 to 22 years old with all the promise in the world, and all of a sudden one play and a knee blows or whatever, and that's it, and your career is over with. So particularly if your family needs the money, I understand why you have to take it. But, Jackson, that balancing act between staying somewhere where you can get legitimate playing time because you're at the top of the depth chart, and with that, it enhances the chance that you're going to get the kind of development you need to be the best player you can be, and with that, maybe the opportunity to play professionally, vis-a-vis going somewhere else where you're going to make more money, but the danger is you're buried on the depth chart. I mean, again, it's up to each individual, but there are times that guys are going to chase the money and it's going to be a great mistake. Other times we're going to hear about a guy, as we were talking about with the Rose Bowl, who's at four different schools in 4 years, right, and never really gets a foothold because of it. I guess you hope they have the right advice, correct?
Yeah, and I think retainment is the best path, just because if you are a returning starter, you're obviously in shape to be in that same spot the following year. Guys like Simeon Harris, who might have gotten a big offer to go to a power conference school, and maybe they would have been second or third on the pecking order at the same position. But I think if you're already in the portal and you see $2 figures side by side, and there's a lot of unknowns from either program, it's really tough to turn down the money. But if you've already got your status locked in and you're a leader and proven there, then I think you probably weigh a lot more into the playing time than the potential dollars. And there's some that dollars are going to be too great to turn down, but you would like to think that some of these players that are in Fresno State's range would be, you know, it would be close enough that they would take the playing time more often than not. But basically the system has created a spot where offensive line, especially, I mean, if you're a Power Four conference program, you can convince 15 players to come in and compete for starting spots and at a pretty decent dollar figure. And you know, if you're not in that power conference money talk, you know, you're looking for the 16th best guy to be your first number one lineman, basically. So it's really a lot of hoarding going on, and a lot of guys that would be playing in the group of five are instead taking money to sit the bench.
Well, that is the reality. That's where you have to hope that that advice is coming from the right place with the right motivation behind it for players that are trying to figure this thing out. The great frustration I have, Jackson, is that initially, and you and I talked about it at the time on air, about transfer portal when, you know, first it was going to be, okay, you had one waiver, then it became, okay, you can go anytime you want. I thought that might be the death of college football in particular right then, college basketball as well. Now I look back at that and say, you know what, that was doable, meaning I could understand the logic without the money involved. Take the NIL out. The logic of saying people that transfer are transferring for one reason, and that is they're looking for a better opportunity to market themselves, meaning playing time, potential for a professional contract, maybe, you know, winning more often somewhere means a great deal to them. You would hope so. And so I was just able to reconcile that when they blew that up with NIL and changed completely, because you're just bringing up where maybe the best opportunity for you on the field of play, playing time, fit, all those things to become the best player in any given sport you possibly can be, that now has been usurped by the fact that you can say, okay, where I'm at might be superior, but the money is superior somewhere else. I guess it's a pleasant dilemma to have if you've got that option, but it's one where you can lament that if you make the mistake about it. So that's why I've said that the frustration every time Fresno State seems to catch up with something, the rules seem to change and the goalposts seem to move and they've got to figure it out again. And that's the battle right now. And later in the week, I will talk about, you know, some of the media situations that Fresno State will have in the new pack and, you know, how much money we may see. Also things like, do you want to put your conference streaming, because it's not going to be conference stuff on the DirecTV or, you know, the old days Dish or whatever, cable systems. Do you want to put that behind the paywall? Can you do that if you don't have enough inventory? We'll go over that a little bit later in the week. It's part of your future. But, Jackson, those are the kinds of things that are going to be critically important monetarily to get money from your conference. But it still doesn't change the reality that somebody else's monster benefactors can completely flip the script on you just by writing big checks, right?
Yeah, exactly. And if you're in the Pac-12, you know, you're trying to boost that revenue share as much as possible, you're probably not going to be anywhere close to the $20 million cap, while most of those juggernaut schools have the $20 million and a bunch of NIL on top of that. So it's definitely a wide gulf, and you got to get as much as you can if you're these programs, but it's a big gap. And so if you are with one of these programs, if you are Fresno State, it's your biggest challenge is competing within the group, because if one team takes off, you know, it's going to be tough to catch up.
You're right. And I mentioned this before, that talking to Billy Beane running the A's back in the early 2000s, when the A's had some very talented teams that they couldn't get by the Yankees. And then every time their talent would be eroded because guys would leave for bigger free agency contracts, very often with the Yankees, I might add. Okay. Then talking to Billy Beane about, you know, what do you do about this inequity? And he said, as a person whose job it is to put this roster together, I have to embrace the inequity, meaning I can't hide from it. I can't lament it, or at least not to the extent that it paralyzes me emotionally. I have to embrace the challenge in front of me. It's easy to say that, But the reality is the A's have not been able to break through in the last 25 years. Every once in a while they have a good team, but they cannot keep their players. And in the meantime, the Dodgers are buying up every single player they can find. The Yankees are trying to do the same. The Mets, etc. You are again put in the position of embracing the inequity, and it's very difficult to do, and that's what Fresno State has to do in regard to the Habs. But you're right. In your conference, all you can do is compete the best you can, and we're right back to what you and I have talked about. Are we ultimately going to have associations, different tiers of conference play, where you agree upon a minimum and maximum salary cap, hard cap? Is that how we're going to do this? And I don't know. I just know we're going to see major changes at the start of the 2030s when these TV contracts go away. But that doesn't change what your benefactors might be able to do, how much they have behind them financially, and how willing they are to bring that towards your program. And that applies all the way across the country. That having been said, Jackson, do you like certain guys that have come in here on the portal? Any names you say, you know what, this was a real, on the surface anyway, a real great get for Fresno State?
Yeah, I think there's a lot of examples. There's guys that might not necessarily be massive gets, but they're definitely pinpointed for what the Bulldogs need. Like Jake Applegate, a tight end from Northern Illinois. Not a lot of stats, but a big run blocker. So some guy that can come in and be very similar to what Jake Tarwater did for the Bulldogs this past season, which is going to be one of those underrated things they need to fill. Dylan Hamston coming off of 8 sacks at Sac State, I think, is a huge one to help replenish the edge rushing that the Bulldogs are going to need to replace with Finn Claypool and Corey Foreman both graduating. There's been a lot of efforts in the secondary. I think Taylor Powell, having played at NIU last year as well, is a big addition. And they just added Corey Stewart from UCLA today as another effort to help replace that. And then, of course, all eyes will be on quarterback Christian Martin to see whether he's going to be the answer or not there. And the kicker, Manaki Watanabe, probably the least known player in the portal, but that Fresno State got. But it's definitely going to be a massive get if he's making big-time kicks for the Bulldogs.
So then in the plus-minus overall, a resounding plus in this particular year of transaction? I mean, are you prepared to say that?
I think relatively. I think they only really lost probably two players that you're disappointed as far as what you would expect the depth chart to look like next year. Richie Anderson, of course, being gone stinks, and he would have liked to have kept Jaden Davis, but most of the other exits have been reserves, walk-ons, guys that haven't gotten playing time yet, and most of these additions are guys that appear poised to fill roles. So strictly looking at the portal, it's definitely a big positive. If you're looking at incoming portal versus graduating seniors, there might still be some work to do there. Some offensive linemen, maybe some more defensive backs would help get the roster back on par.
Well, we will be following it every day and look forward to the pack in the 2026 season. And we'll talk about all the nuances during the weeks to come as we are awaiting football once again. And before that, of course, the baseball season not too far away from starting, same with softball. But we have to come back to basketball now. And look, you and I talked about it start of the week. I talked to Paul about it, to Furtig about it, to Matt Norville. This was a homestand where the Bulldogs had a real opportunity, and they were able to cash it in with two wins. Now they head to the Pit tomorrow. So it's a Wednesday game after a lot of Tuesday, Saturday setup. So Wednesday, Saturday, they're home to Grand Canyon, the doubleheader with the women preceding the men's game against Grand Canyon on Saturday. But, Jackson, we have talked, and I was talking to Paul yesterday about it. The Bulldogs needed to win games on the road. They were able to win at San Jose, although that's not a great team and not a difficult environment. They needed to sweep a homestand. They did that against two teams that were under 500, but close to break even in conference, well above in their total schedule in Colorado State and Wyoming. Now, as we said, it's time for a quality road win. Winning at the Pit has always been difficult. The Bulldogs went a long time before they finally broke through. If they were to win tomorrow, do you consider this that seminal moment that you proved you can win against quality opposition on the road? Are you going to go there if they win this game and say, okay, that checks that off the list as well?
Yes, but I'm not particularly anticipating that to happen. I think the line came out at about 15 points today as the Bulldogs were being underdogs, of course, and I think there's a good chance.
So you're saying bet the number. Is that what you're telling me? If you're saying bet the number, if the Bulldogs get under the 15, Jackson Moore considers it a victory. Is that what you're telling me?
I would say if Zion doesn't play, you know, you can pretty much concede a loss. And if they kept it within 15, that would be nice. And I think the good news for the Bulldogs is there aren't many more of these games. And maybe if Zion's healthy, maybe if the team's more confident, let's say, when they go to Utah State down the road, you know, maybe that's one you can say, all right, you know, now it's time to prove that you can pull this off or at least make it a very competitive game. But I don't think they're quite there yet. And I think Grand Canyon at home in itself is enough of a task to where that should be a very celebrated win, even if the Bulldogs don't look so hot tomorrow.
About the home games the rest of the way, is there a case to be made? I don't want to use the term should win. Okay, I don't want to get there, but that they certainly are more than capable of winning the remainder of their home conference games now that the fact that, I mean, you're not going to see San Diego State at home this year. It's part of the scheduling. You know, and Utah State's already done. Can you say, hey, the rest of the conference games are winnable at home?
I would say so. I think probably the only team left to come in, well, Grand Canyon's going to be a tough one, especially if they just beat Utah State. It's a team that's pretty solid on its own right. It's going to be a tough task. New Mexico comes to town in late February. Other than that, there's not a whole lot of things that scare you. You thought Boise State is probably a team that was going to come in here and beat you, but they've been pretty poor so far in conference play, so all of a sudden that one feels winnable. So Boise at home, San Jose State at home, Air Force home, UNLV home, those are all games you feel like you can and should win if you're playing as well as you have lately. And another good thing for the Bulldogs is a lot of these remaining games are Saturday nights when they should be able to draw pretty good crowds. I think the crowd was a difference maker for that Wyoming game. That was a lot more than I anticipated to see. And they all went home happy, which is a very good thing. There's been some of these opportunities where big crowds show up and they've been left disappointed. So hopefully those same people will be coming back to these games that the Bulldogs have that are winnable at home.
Well, we are done now with Saturday football because all that's remaining are the two conference championship games this coming Sunday and then the Super Bowl. And a couple of weeks after that, the college game done now. So maybe people will turn their attention to college basketball a little bit more. Two final questions for you. One, is Collins okay? I understand that it's not as serious as they thought, but where are we at? Is a game time decision coming up? Do you know?
I think it's probably in a similar boat as his last injury. If he's well below 100%, there's no reason to run him out in a team that they probably don't have a great chances to beat anyway against New Mexico, especially if that means you can get him closer to 100% for the next game that's winnable.
Right.
We'll see. Maybe he ends up being good enough to be out there tomorrow, or maybe it lingers a little bit too long to where he can't go Saturday either, but doesn't seem to be a significant long-term situation.
The other thing is that elephant in the room that we discussed earlier in the week, Sean Gorey has been a revelation. We talked about Stickman and the fact that if Douglas can be healthy, it gives the Bulldogs a great, great opportunity to put greater depth out there in quality play and athleticism. But Gorey himself has been probably the biggest surprise in the team. Stickman also has been terrific. But the ability to hold on to Gorey, is it something, and I know that Vance and those guys are doing everything they can in the way of fundraising. We've talked about the hedge fund stuff before on the air. There are certain associations with Vance's family that I hope work out in that regard. We'll see about that. But just for the immediacy, can you afford at all to project Gorey beyond this year, or can you not do that in this day and age of college basketball where it's just so easy, where it only takes a player or two for somebody to have that benefactor willing to write that check and completely, again, capsize your boat right in the middle of sailing along, huh?
Yeah, I wouldn't anticipate it. I think maybe the season goes well enough to where more funds come Wahlberg's way, and maybe something like that's possible. Elijah Price is a good example, where Fresno State technically had enough money where they could have matched his offer, but then they wouldn't have had nearly as much to go get the rest of the guys that they added right. just throughout the roster. So that's something you got to balance as well. Is it worth keeping Dory if you don't have anyone else around him? So they got to balance with that. I'm curious to see, though, how the rest of the season goes out. If they can keep this momentum up, there may very well be more NIL to utilize this offseason than they've had.
I'll let you go. Where are you at in the it's been turned around meter here? I've told you I'm just taking these 2 years as a single entity, and I'm waiting to see how this year ends, and then I'll make judgment on this. Are you tending toward the optimistic side of things right now?
I would say so. I think just the first task was this team needed to be markedly better than last year, and it looked like that early in the year. Probably not so much during that losing streak the Bulldogs had, and now it feels like they're back on course. You just wanted to see a team that was competent, that had enough depth, that was competitive in most games in conference, and I think they've established themselves as there. It's good now, but probably at the end of the year, it's still like a 500 season or so. It's something to be celebrated relative to where the bar has been for this program, but it's just kind of a starting point on where you would want to go to be successful long term. So I think this is a year where you just have to have the trajectory going the right way, and then the next year is going to be critical to put together an even more competitive team going into the Pac-12.
And that's a very fair view, and as we've talked over and over again, Jackson, as I let you go here, nobody, and I mean nobody, wants it more than Vance does. So, whether you're a great supporter or one of the detractors out there, understand one thing. You've got a guy coaching this team that is so much involved emotionally in trying to get this done. And so in that regard, I've known him a long time, and I like him a great deal. You pull for someone like that, and I hope it works out, and I hope as they continue to play better, they are able to hang on to people, both because of NIL and transfer portal, and also you don't want the catastrophic injuries that can take success away as well. So this program needs some good fortune, and I hope they have it, and we'll just watch it along the way and pull for it to be everything the community would hope it would be. So let you go. Where are you at here? Any specials remaining on the board right now?
Yeah, we currently still have our annual special, which I believe is going to come to the close tonight. So if people want to take advantage of that, lock in for the whole 2026 year. I hope people do so. Just go to parkboard.com and click the green join bar. Right now it's 50% off, which is a little over $5 a month that way. And you have until 9 p.m. Pacific time tonight to take advantage of that.
I've said it before, it's well worth it, so make sure you sign up, particularly with the discount. Jackson, we will break down what happens Wednesday in Albuquerque on Friday on the air once again with you, my friend. Take care. Talk to you then. We'll see you.
All right. You too, Tony. Thank you.
All right. To Factor co-host Jackson Moore, take a break. Come back, tell you about the schedule, and hand it off to Phil. He's got two fine hours for you. Then he's off for basketball tonight, Clovis North in Buchanan. We'll go with the schedule after this as the Bulldog Hour continues on this Tuesday on Central Valley Sports Leader, 1430 ESPN. Buddy, welcome back. 2:52, 3 or 4 minutes ago on the show. Hand it off to Phil. It's a great show behind the bench. Normally 3 hours, 2 hours today, then he'll be heading off to Clovis North and Buchanan tonight. That will be a 6:45 pre and a 7 o'clock tip. So stay tuned for that on 1430 on 790. Same time, 6:45. The Lakers are in Denver tonight, and they will see if they can put up a W. Lakers are favored tonight because of some of the Nugget injuries. We'll see about that. But basketball, 6:45, both stations. Tell you about the schedule beyond that in just a moment, courtesy of Ed Dunkel and his fine business, Precision Civil Engineering. Planning, land surveying, civil engineering, landscape, architecture, construction management. It's all there under one roof. More information, 449-4500 or Precision ENG or Precision Eng if you prefer, .net. And again, always commend Ed for the great fundraising he does for his alma mater, Fresno State, and for the Lyles College of Engineering. The goal, as always, to unify athletics and academics to provide more funding resources to students. It's worked beautifully over the years, and a lot of those grads from the Lyles College of Engineering go to work for Ed at Precision Civil Engineering. Later in the week, it will be a Sunday back-to-back matchup for the combatants in the Super Bowl, as New England will be in Denver at noon. That game is a CBS game for us. It's Westwood One. As soon as that is done, Fox at 3:30, as the end of the trilogy between the Seahawks and the Rams. They have split the two, played two great games, one that Seattle could have won on a field goal at SoFi. They did not. The Rams let that big lead get away in the fourth quarter a few weeks ago up in Lubin, and they will decide the NFC entrant in the Super Bowl. That will be 3:30, both games for us on Westwood One. And then, of course, we'll have the Super Bowl from San Francisco, actually from Santa Clara, if you want to be geographically correct, a couple of weeks down the road again from Westwood One. So stay tuned for that. The shows themselves, I mentioned Phil, 3 to 6 Monday through Friday with his fine show Behind the Bench, sometimes moved around by-play-by-play. You can always reach Phil on the Lee's Air Hotline. That's 559-320-1430. On Thursdays with our good buddy Rada Vadikian, another tremendous benefactor for sports across the valley over these many years. Stop on in. Fashion Furniture, El Paso across from River Park. Best furniture on the planet. Nothing like it in all of California. The great conversation of Phil shows some good eats as well. So stop in and see him on Thursdays from 3 to 6. And stop in at Fashion Furniture any day of the week and check out the great furniture and the great deals there. Paul Mitters has two fine shows with us on 790, our sister station, The Deuce, 6 to 7 on Wednesday evening, Sunbird Sports Show, all about Fresno Pacific Athletics. We also have Fresno Pacific play-by-play coming up, basketball for the men and women, and also baseball a little bit later on, so stay tuned for that. We just had Concordia on our air with Fresno Pacific last week with Scott Bemis and the guys. Also, Paul Mitters has another fine show on Saturday mornings from First Ring Sports on 1430. That is Central Valley Sports Report, 10 a.m. to noon. Check that out. Everything for the station, 1430 ESPNFresno.com. You find the live links and podcasts there. Get the app. Makes it a lot easier to listen. We are with you at 2 o'clock each and every weekday. You can reach me, tdad1@att.net, TDAD, the number one at att.net. I'll get back to you as soon as possible. Tomorrow it will be Jack Furtig will preview the Fresno State game in Albuquerque, which will be a 6 o'clock start our time on the Mountain West Network. And then Thursday, Matt Norville with me, and we'll talk about the women's game and the men's game. And then Jackson back Friday, and we'll also be discussing more about what's going on with the basketball teams and get back to possibly the final bow about transfer portal, just in case there was any belated movement that hadn't gotten through all the administrative channels. All right, the last reminder before we jump on out of here and hand it off to Phil comes from our friends at KFC. Get ready to turn up the heat with the new Zinger sandwich, new chicken sandwich at the local KFCs in Fresno, Clovis, Selma, and Kerman. It's a crispy hand-breaded chicken filet seasoned just right and served hot in a toasted bun with cool crisp lettuce and creamy sauce that hits every craving. It's bold, it's spicy, and it's finger-licking good. Everything at KFC is finger-licking good. So whether you crave the spice or just crave the great taste, stop by, grab off the Zinger, and get used to that delicious KFC crunch, because you'll find it on the Zinger as well. And as we've mentioned to you over and over again, there are a lot of other deals going on in addition to that Zinger sandwich, including the Tuesday deal, which is the $10 eight-piece or eight tenders offer. Also, they have a country fried steak offer on Wednesdays. They have the $5 bowls there throughout the week. They've got their pot pies on sale. So there's a lot going on at the local KFCs in Fresno, Clovis, Selma, and Kerman. And they're another group that really supports athletics in the Valley. So thanks to everybody at the local KFCs. Thanks, of course, to everybody at Lee's Air Plumbing, Heating, and Roofing. Again, you can give Phil a call on the Lee's Air Hotline, 559-320-1430. And thank yous go out, as always, to Ed Dunkel and his fine business, Precision Civil Engineering. And finally, thanks to de facto co-host Jackson Moore and to Jorge on the board. It's been another terrific day. We have basketball on both stations and 2 hours of Phil coming up. He'll talk to you about the national championship game. He'll talk to you about Jimmy Butler probably seeing the Warrior season go up in flames with his injury, and also all about what's going on in the National Football League. So a full 2 hours, a lot for Phil to talk about. See you guys tomorrow with Jack Furtig on KFIG Fresno.